You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 1st of November 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live tonight at RadioAryan.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, hello to you, sir. How are you?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you indeed, loud and clear, crystal clear through your new microphone. Okay. Yes, indeed. How are you?
I'm all right. I wasn't sure whether to click the mute button twice.
No, it works. It works well. Well, you've got to keep continually progressing, haven't we? We'll master the use of the mute button. And that's the next thing now that you've got the new mic. We'll get on top of that.
Yeah, it's on the side of my head, so...
We'll just have to watch out. You know, you don't make too much noise when you're actually pressing the button, because that
when I'm feeling for it,
yeah. But it seems to be working okay. Have you been working on the final part of the series this week?
Well, I have, yeah. But I've going through all the backdated stuff. Looking for the sources. I've come across a couple of more videos which I wouldn't mind including, so there might be another part before I do all the sources.
Yeah, might be another one or two or possibly three parts. There's so much stuff out there, I should imagine.
Yeah, well, there's one in particular what I wanted to put in The Greatest Story Never Told, which was an interview by Ernst Nundl with a British medic who was one of the first in Belsen, and he was it was never asked by any media what he saw, what he heard when he got there. And it's quite an interesting interview and really shows that, the Germans really didn't have a clue how to stop the typhus, and neither did the British when the British got there neither. In fact, they gave food and water to prisoners, which actually didn't help the matter. In fact, killed some.
Yeah, it bloated them up and killed them, didn't it? They weren't aware that when somebody's
Correct.
Been starved for a long time, you know, the last thing you want to do is fill them up full of food. They've got to eat
That's right.
slowly. They ended up killing quite a few like that, which, of course, they blamed
on
Germans.
Yeah, just ignorance, really, weren't it, you know?
Yeah. And what about typhus, then? I think the only way to do that is, cyanide, isn't it?
I think it is actually. Yeah, I think they did manage to use some chemicals. But like I said, it's in this. I got the best of the interview and I put it on a video, but the sound wasn't that good at the time, so I left it out of The Greatest Story. But because I've included that piece from Austria, which shows that there were people actually lying about the Jews being gassed, I thought it'd be a nice piece to put in as well.
Yeah, that would fit together well with it, and always good to hear Ernst Sundl again as well. I mean, such a shame that
of course,
he passed
yes.
In the way that he did. You know, it's these elderly revisionists, you know, it must take its toll on them. You know, the stress that they go through during their life. He had his house petrol bombed, didn't he, at one point, and all this hatred directed.
Well, his son didn't want to know, did he? I mean, you can't blame him, but his son kind of didn't want to get into it at all.
Tragic to, lose part of your family as well and be sent to prison as well. I mean, you know, we really got to honour the guy and make sure his name doesn't get forgotten for everything that
Correct.
He did. Because, you know, he did it for us. He did it specifically for his German nation. But also for all European nations that were lied to.
Well, it's come to rest now, hasn't it? The rooster's home. I mean, we all get called Nazis for a reason.
Yeah, everyone gets called Nazis now. Even Boris Johnson gets called
that's
a Nazi.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
It doesn't have any meaning anymore, and people don't really understand, you know, quite what the National Socialists were. And we're going to be looking again tonight at Goebbels' book, Those Damn Nazis, which he wrote in 1929, which explained just what National Socialism is. I mean, just before we get into that, I mean, it's so strange when people call people Nazis today. And you think, well, you know, I wasn't around in 1942. And that whole estate apparatus got removed and demolished, and there was nothing left of it. You know, how can you call somebody a Nazi today? Just what do they mean by it?
Well, the theory I have is that obviously back then they wanted to wipe National Socialism and everybody concerned off the face of the earth. And now the countries, even the countries that, you know, on paper won World War II, have white races or, you know, nationalists who were now classed as Nazis and are in line for genocide just the same.
Yeah, you think we're the countries that supposedly helped the Jews and fought against the Nazis and supposedly rescued these Jews, and look at the way they've repaid us by flooding our countries with foreigners and trying to make us feel guilty and for slavery and for holocausting Jews and not getting in there quick enough. You know, it's very true what you say, that we lost the war, and all you have to do is look around you to see that we lost the war.
What is annoying me at the moment is academics like Douglas Murray and a couple of others who are talking about how the situation is in Europe. They have yet to hear them mention Krudinov Kalergi, because once that is out in the open, apart from
Nick Griffin spoke about it in the EU, didn't he?
Nick Griffin. Yeah, Nick Griffin's the only one I've heard speak about it. The rest, like I said, these academia don't even mention it. They'll talk about how bad the situation is and how it's all going down the toilet, but, you know, there's no mention of the original source.
Well, they won't mention the Jews either. That's the thing. I mean, Douglas Murray.
That's another one.
He will point out the people that are concerned, but it's like it just doesn't occur to him. But, well, hang on a minute, they all have Jewish surnames. Perhaps there's a connection there. I mean, that's the connection that E. Michael Jones made, wasn't it? I mean, he was looking at things and he was saying, well, what is it that links these neocons with these radical leftists, these Trotskyists, because they're both at the opposite end of the spectrum? What is it that links them? It's the Jewish surnames. And he had the courage to put it together and speak about it. Douglas Murray, you know, he doesn't speak about it. I mean, it's good what he does, because he does wake people up to things and he points out the problems, but, you know, he just doesn't draw that conclusion from it. It's as if it means nothing to him. They all have these same surnames.
Yeah, I mean, he's wrote a couple of books, and as good as they are. Hitchens is another one. He talks about it and says, you know, all he can do now is stand back and just laugh. He's tried his best, convince people of what's happening. And he said, if he doesn't, you know, if he don't laugh, he's going to cry. So, but again, no mention of this Kalergi or the Jews. It's really annoying to me.
Yeah, it's like kind of pointing out the symptoms, but not the cause of something.
Yeah, which is, you know, never the complete picture.
Oh, how are you going to do anything about it if you're just looking at the symptoms? Because the symptoms are going to keep coming until you do something about the cause of it. I mean,
I think Hitchens said in a recent interview that I listened to, he said that he just hopes now that he dies before his house is broken into and he's clobbered to death, because that's the end that he envisages.
Sadly,
probably talking about the Muslims.
Sadly, that's quite a common attitude, isn't it? Well, I'm going to be dead and gone.
I would
by
imagine
the time
so.
That
yeah,
happens. I'm going to be dead and gone by then. So why should I care? It's tragic. It's all come about by people losing their sense of identity as part of a nation. Otherwise, they would be concerned about, you know, what's going to happen to the next generation when I'm gone. Because they, you know, if you understand that you're a part of the nation and that's your identity and that's your family, you're going to be concerned about how your, you know, how your grandchildren are going to be once you're gone.
Exactly.
People are with their family, but people just don't understand anymore that the nation is the extended family. It's just the extended kin.
Well, what he did say was his recommendation. He says obviously it's too late for him now because he couldn't go to another country and you know, find a way of making a living at his late age. But he did say that if he was in his 30s, he would leave the country. He didn't say where he'd go to. But I sometimes wonder where you can go to, because if there's going to be a one world government, then it ain't going to be much different in any other country.
That's the thing, isn't it? You know, some people will say, well, we should go to Hungary or we should go to Russia or whatever. But, you know, what are you going to be able to do there? You don't speak the language. It's not your culture. It's another nation. Okay. Yes, they're white, but they're Hungarian. They have their own national identity. You know, I think it's best that you stay where you are and you try to ensure that you keep where you are safe from all of that. So if you can, move to a place that is still white and do what you can to keep it that way. And you know, talk to people and just get involved in the council and what have you. And be a good neighbor and be a good person and somebody that people look up to, and you know, explain your views, and hopefully that way you'll at least be able to keep the part that you live in safe from it all. I mean, that's all I would advise.
Mm. Yeah, because obviously, you know, we're not allowed weapons as such, so it's a much alternative, is there?
No, if you're stuck in a town and you can't really get away from it, then the best thing you can do really is to form yourself a community of white people, so that if ever there is problems with grooming gangs or drugs or whatever, you've got people that you can call upon to help you. Maybe people that know somebody that's in the police or in the justice service that can, you know, get something done about it. But the only way you're going to find people that have connections like that is to go out into the community and get involved in community things, council things, PTA meetings, getting involved in the school things, voluntary things. I mean, I should imagine if people get involved in voluntary things, then it would just be white people that are there anyway, because you're not going to get Muslims volunteering to clean up the area, pick up the litter, or look after the place. It's always only whites that do things like that. So, I mean, that might be a good idea of how to meet up with other decent-minded whites that are going to protect the country from going downhill.
They don't make it easy, do they? I mean, I don't know how many pubs have closed in the last few years, but I mean, they don't make it easy for people to continue. I mean, once over, like we said, I was talking about you last week. I mean, you know, years ago, people in pubs, they all knew, everybody knew everybody, and, you know, they were welcome in the home. Even if they weren't in the house, they'd wait for the neighbour to come round. It was that freedom was available, but everyone's been isolated these days and individualised.
Yeah, the pubs used to be that central point. You know, they still are in the soap operas, but not...
Yeah, not in the soap operas, but I'm not convinced in real life, not that I frequent many.
No, that's just it, isn't it? There isn't a centre for the community anymore. I guess you've got an alternative to that online. You can, you know, you can talk to other people that are thinking the same as you, but an online community is not the same as, you know, an offline
one. Not exactly the same, no.
But again, this, you know, this is why it's important to have things like the Patriotic Alternative. This is why it's important that people join up with the Patriotic Alternative, because they're doing things offline. They're providing chances for nationalists to meet up with other nationalists and build support networks and get involved in activism. You know, the people that do talk a lot online, that's what they need to be doing. Join up with the Patriotic Alternative.
Yeah. I heard an interview of Nick Griffin this week, and he was of a similar ilk. He's in an organisation, you know, in the European side of it, where he's saying that these people, you know, they should get together and build these nationalist enclaves, you know, and a lot of activism. It sounded pretty positive what he was talking about.
He's one of the ones that ran away to Hungary. Well, he did run away to Hungary for a while. I think they might have got a little bit fed up with him. Yeah, but I mean, well, Nick was leading the British National Party, wasn't he? And we can see what happened to the BNP. So I think I've got more faith in Mark Cullett rather than Nick Griffin. It's Mark's time to shine now, I think, and we should all get behind him. Sure. Right, let's get into those damn Nazis. As we were saying, talking about what the actual ideology was behind National Socialism. And I mean, now when people call you a Nazi, they're just using it as a rude name to call people. It's just a pejorative. But there was a time when it actually meant something, and it meant political ideas. And today, I mean, all the best political ideas can be traced back to them. You know, economic ideas. Even the conspiracy theorists, the economic ideas they talk about were the sort of ideas that the National Socialists actually carried out. They didn't just talk about them. And we've got...
I like this because it's going to explain the socialist side of it. A lot of people don't understand, you know, they'll think that the socialism of National Socialism is, you know, no different to the Marxism. But this goes quite a long way to, you know, to show it's not. So it's an interesting piece.
Yeah, that's a main sticking point, actually, isn't it? Because, you know, people on the right that criticise National Socialism will try to say, oh, it's a leftist ideology. I mean, it's not a leftist ideology. It's just proper, pure nationalism, which also contains socialism, because you can't have the one without the other. Right, well, this is titled, Why Are We Socialists? And he says, we are socialists because we see in socialism... that is the union of all citizens, the only chance to maintain our racial inheritance and to regain our political freedom and renew our German state. So what that's saying is their definition of socialism means the union of all the citizens. And obviously you cannot be a German citizen unless you're of German nationality. So today they would probably say the same thing. Oh, it means the union of all citizens. But according to today's ideology, to be a citizen, you can be of any race. You just have to have the same piece of paper, which of course doesn't work.
Yeah. So it's about like you've got to be in the country for more than 12 months or something. Suddenly you're on the same level.
I was watching a talk show today, and they had this woman called, I think it's Nina Maskow, horrible woman, horrible woman. And she was saying, oh,
I don't support. She's Jewish, I think.
Yeah, she was saying, oh, I don't support England. And someone was saying, well, what nationality are you then? And she was saying, well, oh, I don't have one. I'm part Polish and I'm part this, that, and the other. And he said, oh, so you're stateless. How dare you, she said. How dare you? I've decided I'm going to be a Londoner. That's my identity. And, you know, you don't get to decide, you know, what your nationality is, what your ethnicity is. You know, a dog doesn't get to suddenly decide he's a cat, does he, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's all cliche. You're born in a stable, you're not an horse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just ridiculous that she's so... brainwashed with it all, that she thinks she can just decide what she is. And that whole idea comes from Jews moving from country to country, being a Frenchman one minute, a German the next, an Italian the next.
Correct.
And writing it into law that was the way it is, so that they could be like that. And now everybody thinks that same way. But that's where it originated. That's where it originated. Yeah. Well, I've got a definition here of what socialism is from the dictionary. It says, any of various theories or systems of social organization in which the means of producing and distributing goods is owned collectively or by a centralized government that often plans and controls the economy. And the National Socialist government did plan and control the economy, but it didn't own the means of producing and distributing goods. It nationally owned things that were needed, like railways, electricity, water, that sort of thing. But there was still private ownership, and the private ownership and the distribution, the factories, they had guilds. They didn't have unions like we have today, where you have workers against the boss or whatever. They had guilds. So it was everybody involved in that guild were skilled workers in that particular trade. And they were the ones that said, well, this is what the wages should be. This is how much people should be paid. And it was sort of collectively owned. So you had a mix of the two. And the second definition, it says, specifically in Germany, legislation supported by Prince Bismarck intended to improve the condition of the working man. Among the measures included were the insurance of workmen against accident, sickness and old age, and the establishment of cooperative associations under state protection. So that tells you that even in the dictionary, the German idea of socialism is slightly different to international socialism, because it has another definition which just talks about Marxism. So this German idea was really about improving the condition of the working man, which is what Hitler wanted to do. He wanted to help out the working man.
There's a confusion also with the EU, where it's pushed a lot that the current EU are really the Nazis, because the Nazis had a similar idea to the EU. But the difference was they wanted countries to keep the sovereignty. They didn't want a borderless Europe. Well, people don't realise all this and fall for the spiel.
Yeah, they wanted people to have their sovereignty, and they wanted the bigger nations to help out the smaller nations, basically, but to still keep your identity. The idea of opening up the borders and allowing people from, you know, the south of Europe to come to the north of Europe and work cheaply and undercut the workers, I mean, that would have been anathema to them. That would have gone right against the whole idea of nationalism and socialism. Number one, how does that help the nation to have all this other ethnic nation among you? And number two, how does that help the working man when it pushes all the wages down? So that's a capitalist
which
idea.
Which it always does.
Yeah. So it's a capitalist idea, this no borders. And, you know, the National Socialists wanted to help out the working class. And the way to do that, they wanted to get the upper classes to understand that they needed these working classes just as much as the working class needed the upper class. And they were all as important as each other, because they were all part of the German nation. And that was the number one overriding factor of somebody's value is were they German or not, which is nationalism. So you've got this blend of nationalism and socialism, and it's hard to really, you know, take them apart. It's really just what should come naturally to you. Continuing, socialism is the doctrine of liberation for the working class. It promotes the rise of the fourth class and its incorporation in the political organism of our fatherland, and is inextricably bound to breaking the present slavery and regaining German freedom. Socialism, therefore, is not merely a matter of the oppressed class, but a matter for everyone, for freeing the German people from slavery is the goal of contemporary policy. Socialism gains its true form only through a total fighting brotherhood with the forward striving energies of a newly awakened nationalism. Without nationalism, it is nothing, a phantom, a mere theory, a castle in the sky, a book. With it is everything, the future, freedom, and fatherland. So I think the first line in that, where it was saying it promotes the rise of the fourth class and its incorporation in the political organism of our fatherland, it's saying that these working classes need to have a say in politics. They need to be a part of it. They need to be a part of the decisions that are made, which is, you know, that's the talk that Jeremy Corbyn talks, but it's not the way that he walks. I mean, they won't be raising up the best of the working class. What they will do is they'll look at the working class and they'll say, well, we need X number of women, X number of blacks, X number of homosexuals, X number of what have you, instead of having a meritocracy and getting the people that are the very best at what they do and raising them up.
That's a problem.
Yeah, which is just natural, isn't it, really, to have a meritocracy. Yeah. The people that are the best at doing things, you want to be the ones that are in charge. You want them to have authority. And these people rise up naturally.
It goes back to the grammar schools being closed down. I mean, there was never a better system in the world for education than what grammar schools were. But when they merged them into comprehensive schools, they kind of, in a short space of time, just decimated the education of the country.
Well, the left today were trying to tell you these grammar schools were terrible because they weren't equal. Some people got a better education than others. Well, you want the better people to get the better education. And the ones that aren't so good at books and that sort of thing, you want them to be doing practical things. We talked about this the other week, didn't we, with that question that was sent in about the universities. You know, it's not for everyone. And if you want to make it for everyone, then you've got to lower the standards, and you want the higher standards. And you can say you've got all these different classes, but so long as you say they're all part of the same nation, then it works fine. If you say, well, you've got all these classes, but they're all at war with one another, and their loyalty is to the working class in Africa and Latin America rather than to the aristocracy in their own country, then you've got class war and things aren't going to work. You've got to have that overriding idea that all these different groups in society are connected through blood, through their ancestors. So they're all connected up and they all work together. Marxism is...
Well, we said before that we can't, you know, to make everybody equal, you can't drag everybody up. It's impossible. So you've got to drag everybody down to that level. And that's exactly what comprehensive schools did.
And also, when you tell people that their loyalty is to the working class in other countries rather than loyal to the aristocracy in their own country, then it splits the country up and it makes them much easier to be manipulated and taken over.
Yep.
And, you know, that's the same reason why we have all these degenerate ideas that are promoted, because it breaks down our resolve, breaks down our unity, and makes us much easier to rule. It makes everybody into an individual. Instead of part of a strong, healthy nation, they're all weak, atomized individuals.
Broken branches instead of an oak.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good analogy. The sin of liberal thinking was to overlook socialism's nation-building strengths, thereby allowing its energies to go in anti-national directions. The sin of Marxism was to degrade socialism into a question of wages and the stomach, putting it into conflict with the state and its national existence. As understanding of both these facts leads us to a new sense of socialism, which sees its nature as nationalistic, state-building, liberating, and constructive. And of course, a part of communism and Marxism is smash the state, isn't it? Let's get rid of the state. Whereas, really, you need a state that's there to serve the nation in order to get everybody working together, as you know, like the framework that everything works within.
Mm.
They're looking at it in a totally different way with Marxism. The bourgeois is about to leave the historical stage. In its place will come the class of productive workers, the working class that has been up until today oppressed. It is beginning to fulfill its political mission. It is involved in a hard and bitter struggle for political power as it seeks to become part of the national organism. The battle began in the economic realm. It will finish in the political. It is not merely a matter of wages, not only a matter of the number of hours worked in a day, though we may never forget that these are an essential, perhaps even the most significant part of the socialist platform. But it is much more a matter of incorporating a powerful and responsible class in the state, perhaps even to make it the dominant force in the future politics of the fatherland. The bourgeoisie does not want to recognise the strength of the working class. Marxism has forced it into a straitjacket that will ruin it. While the working class gradually disintegrates in the Marxist front, bleeding itself dry, the bourgeoisie and Marxism have agreed on the general lines of capitalism and see their task now to protect and defend it in various ways, often concealed. I mean, that's far ahead of its time, isn't it? Drawing the link there between capitalism and Marxism. Yeah. I mean, nobody else was saying
this. Well, it's just like you said. You said a couple of minutes ago that to be borderless in Europe is something that capitalism wants, but it's also what communism wants. So he's bang on, just as you were.
They're just using different excuses to get to the same goal, isn't it? To get rid of borders. And it doesn't matter what excuse they use. That's what they're trying to do. And Goebbels knew back then that the bankers and the bourgeoisie, they were working with the Marxists. And he's saying,
funding them.
What we need is responsible people in the state. How are you going to get responsible people in the state? Well, you know, partially, you need to have people there that have worked really hard and really made something of themselves. You need to have people there that are aristocratic and have been brought up to rule in the first place, but also alongside them, you need people that have managed to work their way up through the classes to get to the top and that have really made something out of themselves. And the only way you can really allow that to happen is if you've got like an ethnic nation, because then the classes will be permeable and somebody could work their way up. And by working their way up, they show that they've got merit, and then you put them in a very important position. And that is what Hitler was. Somebody that started right at the bottom, spent time homeless, spent time in prison, didn't have degrees to his name, worked as a soldier in the army, and he managed to work his way right the way up to the top. So he'd seen what life was like at the bottom. And he'd lived in places where, you know, there were mice running around, and, you know, he didn't know from day to day what he was going to get to eat. And he'd had a hard life. And he remembered that when he got to the top.
How many politicians can you say have actually felt starvation?
Yeah, none of them. None of them without some virtue signaling charity thing where they go without food for 24 days, or I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. That's just about it.
Correct.
None of them that have worked their way through to where they are. And what Goebbels is saying here is we need a system where these people can work their way up to the top, and they do get rewarded, and they get put in these important positions where they have a chance to make these decisions that are going to help the nation. And again, to get to that, you have to have everybody putting the good of the nation above the good of the individual. And you do that through, you have to have that going through every part of life. You know, that has to be taught to the kids at school, in their lessons at school, out when people are playing sport, in the factories, you know, in the media, all this drive to do what's best for the nation. And the nation is what has to come first. And the nation is who you have to thank for everything that you have. And everything that we have was created by our race. And a lot of it was created by the British. You know, look around at all the things that we have. You know, this is what they should be teaching people. Look at all this stuff. This was provided for us by our ancestors. And your role in life is to provide more of this stuff for the people in the future. It's not all just here for you to take.
They're destroying it.
Yeah, it's not here just for you to take it. It's not here just for you to make as maximum profit. It's here for you to build with for the next lot, so that the next lot have this you know, this stuff built for them that they can build upon.
Well, the biggest crime, I believe, in the last couple of decades was the fact that we sold off North Sea oil, the one thing, the look of what we had of discovering North Sea oil should have took care of this nation for quite some time. Didn't even get a chance to take off.
Well, we've sold so much stuff off, Dennis. You think about it. You think about the electric system, the infrastructure, the electric grid. Who is it that built the electric grid? Who was it that built it? British people built all of that. Mm-hmm. Who was it that came up with the designs for it? British people came up for the designs with it. Who created the steel and the concrete? British people did all of that. Do the British people own it now?
Yeah.
Who owns it now? Chinese companies, French companies.
Is there any steelworks in England?
Well, no. I mean, the whole electric, the power grid, the infrastructure, all this stuff that we built, that our people built on our land with our ingenuity for our descendants is in the hands of private companies in foreign countries making a profit out of us. I mean, that's just one example. You think, well, so how could that happen? How could that happen?
It happens
because they have this idea of, you know, making as much profit, and, you know, we're here to make as much profit as we can for the economy. Not the economy is here to make as much improvement to the lives of the nation as it can. And the nation works, you know, to grow the economy. And with the growth of the economy, the life is supposed to be improved for the people in the nation. But when you get this idea of making as much profit for the sake of profit and for the individual, then you get things like selling off the power stations, selling off the electric grid, selling off the water companies.
The coal.
Natural resources, coal, water. And you could put electricity into that as well. But these are natural resources that are provided by the world around us, that are owned by the...
Should be free.
Yeah, but they should be... owned by the country because they're part of our territory, and owned collectively by the nation with the government as the trustees, making enough money out of it in order to keep it ticking over, but not selling
it's
it off.
Profit, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's like Gordon Brown selling all the gold reserves off, you know, all these things that, you know, that are actually, they're a store of wealth for the country that should be owned by the nation. And for some reason, it's possible for the state to sell them off. And the state allows itself to do that. So you got a state that's hostile to the interests of the nation, and the state itself. The state itself is supposed to be there to help the nation. I mean, what was the analogy Hitler used? It was, you know, it was the bowl that contained the water of the nation, or something similar to that. It was the container.
Yeah, I kind of saw in the Great Story Never Told, that I had a clip near the end there where it showed, you know, the youth of National Socialist Germany, and then the youth of Britain today, which was like no comparison.
It's a shocking comparison, because you will see happy kids, happy, healthy kids playing outside, you know, healthy leapfrogging, doing sport. And you compare that today and you'll find like grimacing, angry looking kids that don't see a future.
No hope.
Yeah. States that are like war zones, because everything's done with this idea of profit making, not done with the idea of.
Then they brought in the half of Africa to help.
Yeah.
Stab the rest of the nation.
to split things up, to break things up. I mean, it helps to understand the way that things should be. You know, that's why it's good for us to discuss things like this, because, you know, people look around and they'll see, well, there's something wrong, but what is it? So it helps to discuss it and say, well, this is what's wrong. And the way to correct it has been tried in the past, and it was successful. So at least we know, you know, what needs to be done. Continuing here, we are socialists because we see the social question as a matter of necessity and justice for the very existence of a state for our people, not a question of cheap pity or insulting sentimentality. I'll just stop there. I mean, look at the grievance industry today and all this nonsense about hate crimes and racism. That's cheap pity and insulting sentimentality that says, you know, that these Negroes, they're all victims of racism. They're all victims. It's got nothing to do with them being more likely to commit crime. It's got nothing to do with them having a low IQ. It's all because the white man's been nasty to them. And they have this victim mentality. All these minorities, they have a victim mentality, don't they? It's like, feel sorry for me because people have said mean words to me. And it's ruined my life.
What power does that
life.
Give them when they look on us now as almost a minority in its own country? The power that gives them of their inbred hatred of us is amazing. I mean, it shouldn't even be on the Richter scale.
Well, I think a part of that, especially with blacks, is they're like, you know, how I think they're disgusted because they can see that we have all these things that they're not capable of doing, that they wish that they had. And instead of acknowledging it, we say, oh, no, we're just the same as you. You know, I'd be very insulted at that if somebody was patronizing me like that. They had lots of things that I was incapable of doing, and they said, oh, no, I'm just the same as you. You know, you would be quite insulted at that, and you'd be quite angry at that person for not being grateful for what they actually do have and not making the use of it.
Exactly.
You know, if the blacks have enough sense to actually think like that, But you would be insulted by being told that you're a victim all the time and you're not capable of doing things on your own merit. You have to have diversity quotas and you have to have lower exam results lowered for you and all these things. It would be insulting. You'd say, I want to succeed. I want to succeed off my own back. Thank you very much. I don't want your help. But, you know, they don't. They go along with it. And that's what they're saying here. We don't want this cheap pity. You know, we don't want people to be on the dole, it's just scratching a living. We want people to be offered jobs, and we want these jobs that they're offered to do things that are of importance, like building infrastructure. So in 50 years' time, they can look back and say, I built that bridge, I helped build that road, I helped build those houses, and all those things being built to help the nation. I mean, we've got all this building work going on now, but it's all to build houses for foreigners. We don't produce enough to replace ourselves. So every one of those new houses that's been built is for a foreigner. It's shocking when you think that.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, we've got great swathes of the country being concreted over just so that they can fill it up with black people and brown people. Well, we've got white people.
I wonder how we've ever got so far.
Yeah, well, it gets so far because we allowed it to get so far through greed. I mean, I know I'm knocking, you know, the people at the top here, but, you know, we've got plenty of people that are motivated by greed that are at the bottom of the scale and that go along with this. Continuing, the worker has a claim to a living standard that corresponds to what he produces. We have no intention of begging for that right. Incorporating him in the state organism is not only a critical matter for him, but for the whole nation. The question is larger than the eight-hour day. It is a matter of forming a new state consciousness that includes every productive citizen. Since the political powers of the day are neither willing nor able to create such a situation, socialism must be fought for. It is a fighting slogan both inwardly and outwardly. It is aimed domestically at the bourgeois parties and Marxism at the same time, because both are sworn enemies of the coming workers' state. So it's all about the working man here, isn't it? And he's got to be made a part of it all.
Yeah.
He's got to be made a part of it all. I mean, the farmers and the labourers are just as important as the intellectuals and the scientists. You know, the intellectuals and the scientists.
This was the thing.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to do what they do if they weren't having the food brought in every day from the farms and feeding them. And the farmer wouldn't mind feeding the intellectual and the scientist if the intellectual and the scientist were coming up with innovations that were improving the money that the farmer got, so he could improve his life. So everybody needed to help everybody else out, and then everybody's living conditions would improve. That was the idea. That was the National Socialist idea of socialism. Not look at the rich; they've all got far more than the poor. We need to take it all from them And if you look at today, what Jeremy Corbyn is campaigning for the election, and you know he's shouting and stamping his foot about how what we've got to do is tax the rich. We've got to tax more from the people at the top. We've got to tax more from corporations. We've got to tax more from the landlords. And that, I don't think that's what people are most upset about.
Causes division.
Yeah, and
always
jealousy.
Causes division. That's the problem.
And jealousy is saying, yeah. Look, he's got more than you. Let's take it from him. We'll use the state to take it from him. And it's theft. You don't know, how that person has earned their money. They probably work very hard for it. And everybody does what they can to avoid paying, the maximum tax. They all do what they can to, only pay the least amount of tax that they can. I'm not jealous of people at all.
That was the job of Theresa May's husband, believe it or not. He was an expert and worked for the big companies and saved them as much tax as he could.
Yeah,
that's the Prime Minister's husband.
It doesn't surprise me, but I mean, it doesn't bother me. It's like when they go on in America, oh, look, Donald Trump, let's see your tax returns. I mean, honestly, is anybody really that interested in the tax that they pay at the top? That's a deflection from what's important. Taking the money from the guy, these guys at the top that work hard, it isn't going to help the country because they'll just leave the country or they'll just find other ways to not pay so much tax. What you need to do is, what I would suggest is lower the taxes, get everybody paying the same amount of tax, get rid of all the foreigners, and inculcate in people a sense of nationhood and a sense of identity and a sense of responsibility so that the people that are rich at the top, they feel responsible for the people at the bottom that are working at the farms and they want to raise their money. They want a better standard of living for them. And that's how it was before. You had noblesse oblige. The aristocrats felt obliged to help the poor. And they saw the fact that they had the poor as a good thing because it meant they had the chance to be charitable, because to be charitable is good. It's part of what it means to be a white man is to be charitable. We get rewards for doing that. We feel happy that we've done something charitable. So they were happy to do this. Now they're encouraging people to just take as much as they possibly can. And look down your nose at the poor. Look down your nose at the dole scum and the benefit scroungers. They're all just trying to scrounge what they can from the state. That's the wrong attitude. You need to be saying, look, all these people are part of the same nation. If they're not, you should want them to be doing well. And you should look at them as being your extended family. I think if that was to be taught to people, we would soon have a better standard of living.
You need strong leaders for that, though, with conviction, which we don't really have at the moment.
Well, it's only natural, isn't it? I think
Germany certainly did. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they did back then. But I think even children can understand that. They can understand that their family is what's most important to them. As people get older, they get brainwashed. But all of these things should be obvious. Just when you look around you, the way that the world is, that's the way that it's supposed to be. And I think children can see that. They understand that these foreigners shouldn't be here. They don't understand them. They don't know what it is, but they don't like them. They self-segregate when they're at the school.
Probably understand there's only two genders as well, but
oh, yeah, it's all different. Definitely. I mean, that very much confuses them. But it's all about reacting to the world how it is rather than, how you would want it to be or how you wish it would be. They wish everybody was equal and that there was no difference between the races, but that's not the way that it is. There are differences between them and you have to modify the way that each are treated because of it. And you can't just blend everybody in together in one area without destroying what it was that made that area have its own individual culture in the first place and what made it special in the first place. The reason the Greek Empire fell is because there were no longer any Athenians in Athens. It all become race mixed and it was full of foreigners. So it fell. same for Rome, I guess.
History repeats itself.
Yeah. Well, he was talking here about how both the bourgeoisie and Marxism are both sworn enemies of the coming workers' state. And he says, it is directed abroad at all powers that threaten our national existence and thereby the possibility of the coming socialist national state. Socialism is possible only in a state that is united domestically and free internationally. So you have to have nationalism in the country so that they're all looking out for each other. And the state itself has to be free from things like IMF debts, which will be telling them, you know, you've got to have austerity measures, you've got to cut out these subsidies on the fuel and all the rest of it. So this is why they were talking about breaking this usury slavery, this debt to slavery, breaking the shackles of usury. I forget the exact term of it, but that's why they're making this point here, because Germany had this big debt after the Versailles Treaty, and they needed to get free of that so that they didn't have these obligations, so that, you know, the rest of the world didn't have a hold over them, the international banks didn't have a hold over them. It's very important.
Yeah, I think Voltaire said, didn't he, that to see who's ruling, you're like, you see who you can and you can't criticise. Well, Dennis Wise says, as long as usury is in the West, the Jews are ruling us.
Yeah, I mean, it's a simple way to take control of everything, isn't it, really? To siphon off all the wealth in the world will go to whoever it is that's lending stuff out and putting usury on it. And these
banks, as long as usury's around, the Jews are in charge.
And it's beyond that as well, isn't it? Where they just publish a debt and that suddenly becomes currency and they haven't actually lent out any money. All they've done is publish a number or publish a piece of paper and that has to come back. So that means that everything in the world gets monetized, doesn't it? Everything in the world gets sold or whatever, so that money comes into being in order to buy that. But that money is all in the form of debt, and it all goes back to the banks. So that means that the banks own everything in the world, every piece of wealth that we have through this system. So, you know,
that's called it's Jewish magic.
Usury. Yeah. That's why the first thing the National Socialists did was set up their own economic system, set up their own monetary system with their own money. And that's why they were cut off from doing transactions with the rest of the world. So what they did, they said, well, we'll just barter with you then. We'll give you X amount of our stuff. You give us X amount of your stuff. And as the measure to see whether the value is exactly the same, we'll use, you know, whatever currency. But we'll just use that to measure it. We won't actually pay you in that currency. So they say, well, we'll give you $1,000 of oil for $1,000 of timber. And the $1,000 doesn't actually get used. You just transfer the timber over and you just transfer the oil over. And that cuts out the middleman. So that was the way they found to carry on trading with these other countries. And of course, that infuriated the banks even more, because then they were cut out from being the middlemen again, which is another thing that Jews are mostly responsible for. I mean, that's your merchant, isn't it? The middleman.
Yep.
So it's selling things on. The bourgeoisie and Marxism are responsible for failing to reach both goals: domestic unity and international freedom. No matter how national and social these two forces present themselves, they are the sworn enemies of a socialist national state. And I mean, they are today, aren't they? You've got Labour that are promoting themselves as the socialists, and you've got Boris Johnson promoting himself as the nationalist. And, you know, we need Britain to go it alone. And yet, what have we got? We've got Boris's Brexit deal, which is the same as Theresa May's, but without the backstop. And you've got Corbyn's socialism, which includes open borders, completely open borders, and allowing anybody that wants to come into Britain to come into Britain, and anybody that comes into Britain to vote. So neither of them are nationalist, and neither of them are true socialists. They're just serving this banking system, which Goebbels is pointing out here.
talking about the actual deal, which is, as you say, it's just a Mark IV or Theresa May's plan. It still ties us to the EU. It doesn't give us the freedom for our own trade deals. That's the problem, even if this one goes through. So I'm really praying for a no deal Brexit, to be honest, because I think we're still going to be tied.
Well, that could well happen. I mean, what is it, January 31st? If the deal doesn't go through by January 31st, then we leave without a deal. So it depends what the outcome of the election is. I would like to see Labour get totally smashed. I'd like to see the Conservatives probably win by a narrow majority, and I'd like to see the Brexit Party win lots of seats. And then what you would see is you would have to see an alliance between the Brexit Party and the Conservatives, a coalition, and then either that deal would get changed or they would just vote it down so that we ended up leaving without a deal. So I think that is a possible outcome. But, we'll have to see what happens.
Well, that's the one I'm wanting, yeah.
Funniest thing was Donald Trump calling into Nigel Farage's radio show. I thought that was fantastic, calling into his podcast. You know, wouldn't it be good if a famous person like that calling into one of our podcasts, Dennis? It'd be fun.
Yeah, I wonder what they'd say.
Yeah, I wonder what the listeners thought. You know, it's not the sort of thing you imagine a president doing, is it? Calling up someone's radio show in another country to give their views on the election.
Yeah, this impeachment's interesting because they reckon that Trump's pretty safe, really, but things have been known to go sour, so that'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Well, so far, they haven't allowed the Republicans to vote.
He looks likely to win the next one, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, that impeachment thing, I think so far they haven't allowed the Republicans to vote. That's the only reason why it's proceeding, because it's supposed to be voted on and attended by both Republicans and the Democrats, and the Democrats have just not allowed the Republicans to vote. They've not allowed them to attend the proceedings. It's just like a pantomime, a charade that they're going through that's not actually got any legal power at the moment.
They're probably hoping someone's going to turn, I think, if they keep swinging it long enough.
Yeah, I think we might end up seeing that Schiff character that told those blatant lies about Trump's phone call. I think we might see him actually taken to court for that. And what I'd really love to see is that Speaker, John Bercow. I'd like to see him taken to court for treason, everything he's done.
Well, the one in Parliament?
The one that's just stepped down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we are to doubt.
Yeah, if it wasn't for him, we'd have left the EU by now. Well, let's finish with Goebbels' quotes here. He says, "We must therefore break both groups politically. The lines of German socialism are sharp and our path is clear. We are against the political bourgeoisie and for genuine nationalism." And again, you know, people today or people on the left, they think nationalism, they equate with capitalism. They equate it with capitalism, and that's not true. That's false. And you can see here that Goebbels is against what today we would call capitalism, and he's against what we would call today socialism. So it's the genuine alternative. Because you get the conspiracy theorists saying, well, we're against capitalism and we're against communism. And you're like, well, you know, why are you against national socialism then? That was the answer to it. That was the third way.
Exactly.
He says, we are against Marxism, but we are for true socialism. We are for the first German nationalist state of a socialist nature. We are for the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And we'll get into why they are a workers' party next week. And that's covered the socialist bit.
Yeah.
Just before we go, I'll just say we've got a bit of a treat next week. If listeners check out the Radio Aryan site, they might find something they might enjoy listening on Monday to Friday in the Daily Nationalist slot. And also next week we're going to be rebranding the website from Radio Aryan to Radio Albion. There's a couple of reasons for this, because calling ourselves Radio Aryan is rather limiting our reach, I think, because we've got such great content on here. I don't want people to be put off by thinking we're to do with an American street gang and or thinking that we just deal with National Socialist stuff here, because we've got lots of British history. And also Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, his he has problems because when he wants to cite his work, which he does, his peer-reviewed research, it's difficult for him to say that it was published at Radio Aryan, and it causes problems for him at university. So that's some of the reasons for it, but it's actually been 4 years since we were Radio Aryan this month, and before that we were Radio Stormer for a year, so I feel now it's time for phase three, and we'll become Radio Albion. So by this time next week, Truthful Out Radio should be coming through at radioalbion.com instead of radioarian.com. But the reason why I'm really bringing this up is, as I say, is because there's something listeners might enjoy on Monday through till Friday in the Daily Nationalist slot. But anyway, thank you for coming on today, Dennis.
Pleasure, sir.
Thank you, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.